agree to respect. A lot of people will state agree to disagree. All right, let's just agree to disagree. But you can agree to disagree very disrespectfully. It can be very dismissive. And so when we say agree to respect, it's that we always own the choice to respect the other person. It's our power. It's our choice. They don't have to respect us for us to respect them. They don't have to listen to us the way that we listen to them. But that's where we come back to that seed planting, that what if I left every conversation and even every disagreement where the person felt fully acknowledged?
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the highlight reel builder for authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got a treat for you that's good enough to eat 7 times over, my friends. It's right indeed, because that's a lucky guest, y'all. Look at time and day, because we're able to get this wonderful guest today, who's probably more booked in the library than Chuckley said before, press the record button, because my man is in high demand, more I demand the freaking weed, y'all, because today's wonderful best-selling author, y'all. He's a father. He's a husband. TEDx speaker who's been around the world and travels around the globe to give speeches, as well as a social entrepreneur and a meaningful work researcher. So hear that right, folks. If you're all about making meaning, you got the right guy, my friend. So let's give it up for Mr. Double J to the F himself, the one and only Justin Jones Fosu. How you doing today, Justin?
I'm good. So thank you so much, Dom. I appreciate it, brother.
Yes, indeed. Appreciate you, my man. Sprite indeed. Sprite indeed. My man's been killing it indeed, checking out some of your stuffs and heard your TED Talk. And shoot, like, my man's been freaking killing it indeed. And funny enough, I heard you actually kind of got to this point by being one of those accidental HR professionals.
Yes. It's actually pretty funny. I loved one of the things that really stood out to me. I was working as a store manager at a really unknown French store named Target. And one of the things while being there was, that's Target for those who didn't get it. Because some people were like, Target, I've never been to that French store. Well, one of the things that really resonated was there were some aspects of my job I hated, right? It felt at times like babysitting, and I was just like, man, what am I doing? But I was really energized. And one of the ways I was able to bring meaning to my work is getting involved with our team trainer program. And as I started getting involved and started, you know, creating the team training program for our store, it really just catapulted my mind, my essence. I was like, I love this stuff. Like, I love this aspect of training. So I reached out, I'm just a store manager at this time. I reached out to the head of organizational development for all of Target. And I was like, hey, I'd love to learn more about this and ways to engage. And she gave me some really good feedback and information. And that really then led me down the HR route. And so then I left Target to work for one of the top financial firms in their global HR, and specifically within corporate training and development. And so I kind of fell into it. I don't have an HR background. At least initially I didn't. And I was a marketing person. And yeah, I kind of fell in. And I love it. And so here I am.
Sweet. That's what I'm talking about indeed. That's what I'm talking about indeed. That's right. Dude. You love to see it. You love to see it indeed. And funny enough, you actually were a radio personality too at one point on top of that, right?
Yeah, every Friday night, in Baltimore, it was an NPR affiliate station. I was WEAA. And so it was like, this is Listen Up with Justin Jones Fosu, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And so it was for 3 years, had a great time. And this is one of those lessons that I think it's helpful for everyone to learn. Because when I stopped doing the radio show, I had a lot of people like, wait a minute, why are you stopping? You have thousands of listeners, you've grown it, you're doing really well, people are tuning in, and all these kind of things. And the statement came to me that sometimes in our lives, because it was a really good thing, sometimes in our life, we have to remove good things to make more room for the great. And I realized as I did alignment for the things in my life, while I enjoyed it and it was a good thing, for me, as what I was accomplishing, it wasn't great. And the thing that I wanted to really develop was as I was speaking and traveling, and as I was traveling more, I had to have more people host to fill in for our radio show and all these things. I was like, I just can't do both well. And so I gave it up after 3 years, but it was really, really meaningful, really time. And it helped me, I think, even with all these podcasts, as I remember, you know, my radio show days. I remember, you know, thinking on the fly and trying to figure out how to provide the best level of content for our listeners. And so, yeah, that's my old school radio show days.
And that's crazy work. No wonder I found that interview from you in the Edith Pratt Library. You were actually in my hometown. That was a few years ago. I'm in Baltimore.
Wait a minute, do you still live there?
Still in Baltimore today.
Man, so I went to Morgan State University. I was a former Mr. Morgan State. Went to University of Baltimore for my MBA, and so I spent 14 years in the Baltimore, D.C. area. So, I missed that level of what I call ethnic, racial, country diversity that existed in the DMV. Don't have as much of that here in Charlotte. It's here, but it's not the same level that it was in the DMV.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. I'm talking about indeed. That's right indeed. My man's got that extra good history, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. It ain't just a cherry. It's three cherries on top. So my goodness, man, shoot. So my man's been doing all sorts of wonderful work, and he got this new, wonderful, fresh book out called I Respectfully Disagree, How to Have Difficult Conversations in a Divided World, man. Like, I love the title, man. So what inspired it?
Yeah, so I'm doing a lot of work around our inclusive mindset work. And just to be very clear, inclusion is about everybody. It's not just about Black people. It's not just about women. It's not just about, you know, people with different sexualities. It's about every single one of us. Inclusion is how do we create cultures of belonging where everyone feels like they can show up in their full and best selves. And so I need to first state that. Second is I would make this statement in my sessions, and all of them, you know, because I was really trying to tell people really what diversity and inclusion wasn't. And I was like, it's not a kumbaya experience where we all hold hands and be like, diversity, kumbaya. Like that's not diversity and inclusion. But I would make this statement is that it's when we can disagree with each other and yet still respect each other. And then I would make this deeper statement, you know, that we can vehemently disagree with someone's ideology and still passionately pursue their humanity. And there was always this audible gasp, like, oh, wow, you know. And the people will come up after several times and be like, Justin, I love that quote, but how do I do it? Or there'll be people who would try to stump me and like, well, what if they say this? Or what if they believe this? And what I realized was I wanted to provide an answer to my many participants who asked, how do I do it? And I wanted to do it in a way that was research-based, in a way that was fun, relatable, practical for the everyday person, but it also encouraged people to make progress. And so that's how it really came about. It's saw an opportunity to support and help. I mean, that's as speakers and consultants, that's the best research that we can do when our participants, when the people that we coach and work with, when they tell us, hey, this is what I'm interested in, or this is something, you know, that really is, you know, stands out for me. It behooves us to lean into what they're asking, because there's probably a lot of the people who are thinking it but aren't asking.
Definitely indeed. You're so right about that. It's funny how folks are always trying to stump you. It has to be interesting too. How you're out in the field and you're giving keynotes and trainings and workshops, and you got to get your folks like, "Hey, let's try to stump the speaker." Then it becomes a source for content later, and it's because it and it kind of speaks to kind of like the way things are now. Why your book is so needed now? Because it feels like some folks want to hide behind all these masks and veneers and want to win everything. I mean, like, especially arguments, especially if it's like online or whatever, and try to fence the real world. And it's like, all right, you're cool, bro. We get it. I disagree. All right. Like, you ain't changing nothing, man. It's like, all right, we'll check the facts and figures and everything, but it's like, okay, you're not going to change your mind on this particular topic, bro. Like, it's okay to not have someone change right there on the instant, because, to be honest, change doesn't always happen instantly.
100%. And that's one of the things, that's the essence of our book, right, is that this book is not about changing people's perspective. Right now, I can be honest and say the research backs that people actually will consider what you're saying more when you practice these principles, right? We have five pillars that we talk through, and it's embodied within the research around conversational receptiveness, that they'll think about it more rather than putting up their defensive walls. So, but it's not a persuasion technique. It's not about how do you get people to your side. To your point, sometimes it's just seed planting. Sometimes, you know, we're just planting seed into someone and we're giving people the gift of respect. Like, that is the beauty of it. The second piece of it is that sometimes people just want to be heard and acknowledged. And we as human beings, we do a very poor job. A lot of us do a poor job. And even me at times does a really poor job at really fully acknowledging people. You know, even you think about your partner relationships, right? Like, sometimes a person's saying something and they just want to be acknowledged in a full, authentic way. Not that you're always going to agree, not that you're always going to believe their perspective. And so sometimes what people are saying, they're not saying, "Hey, I need you to believe what I believe." They're just saying, "I want you to actually really hear me, to acknowledge that you understand my perspective, or at least how I got there, even if you disagree."
So I'm talking about the taste, talking about the taste. My man said five pillars indeed. Cheers. So I might take us through at least three, and so that way folks get the other two.
Yeah. Well, I'm all about transformational, right? I'm gonna give you all five because I don't believe in the transaction. I think that, you know, we have good work and we put out really good work, people want to get more. So I don't leave those cliffhangers. So I'll give you five. If you want to dive in deeper, definitely check out the work. But the five pillars, and I'll kind of give a brief summary of each. Pillar number one is challenge your perspective. And when you challenge a perspective, this happens before any disagreement even occurs. And why is this important is because when we build those muscles to be in environments, circles, engage people that we don't know a lot about and or that we disagree with, it helps us when we're in those moments, when we're actually disagreeing with people. So I encourage people, one practical action we do, we talk about the Circles of Grace Challenge. It's every 6 to 12 months, I go to events, experiences, or engage with people in which I don't know a lot about and or I disagree with. And I go asking two questions. What did I learn about these events, people, or experiences? And what did I learn about myself? And it's a really fascinating opportunity because it allows us to consistently work those muscles. So when we hear somebody share a perspective that's unique or different, or, you know, we may have, "Oh, I've heard that before," right? Or, "Oh, yeah, thank you. Tell me more about that. Oh, yeah, I remember I had this conversation with," and it allows us to do that. So that's number one. Pillar number two is be the student. And it's where we focus more on listening and learning rather than lecturing. Oftentimes, and that's one of the reasons that social media is one of the worst platforms to have really meaningful conversation on, it's because it's a one-way tool. I can go on there and I can post my perspective and I am a lecturer at all times. Very rarely are we the student. And that's the beauty of when we go into conversations with people and we're hearing their perspective, if we take a posture that I can learn something, it's phenomenal. Now, the research bears this out. There's a really great theory called the inverted U theory, and it normally deals with performance, but it also impacts learning. And it's generally that there are two places we don't learn, at least we don't learn effectively. Number one, when we think we know absolutely nothing, and number two, when we think we know everything. And so when we approach the disagreements from a perspective of what can I learn, it opens us up to receive more. Pillar number three is cultivate your curiosity, and it's where we fill in the gaps with curiosity rather than conclusions. And we all, I mean, our brains are on autopilot. It's designed to conserve energy for things it thinks it doesn't know. And one of the ways that that happens is even in our listening. And so we encourage people to challenge their double dutch style of listening. And that's what we did. We talked about in the TEDx. But like when we're waiting to jump in, like, I'm about to jump in. Take a breath down, take a breath. And now this is why I disagree with you. Rather than what we created a tool called the power of three, where you listen at least to the third level of a conversation so that you're able to get a basis, the foundation of understanding of what they're actually talking about. Pillar number four is seek the gray. And we know that there are many shades of it. And when you seek the gray, you realize life is more nuanced. People are more nuanced than we give credit. Things aren't black and white, but our brains want to make them black and white because it's easier to comprehend. But when we approach each person, each situation, each ideology from, I wonder what shades of gray there are, rather than is it either this or that, right? Is a person wearing a hoodie this or that? Is a person that reads this type of book or has this type of faith this or that? And it's so nuanced. It's that what if we treated everyone like a beginner, right? And that's pillar number four. Pillar number five is the last one, and one of the more profound ones to me, and it's agree to respect. A lot of people will state, agree to disagree. All right, let's just agree to disagree. But you can agree to disagree very disrespectfully. It can be very dismissive. And so when we say agree to respect, it's that we always own the choice to respect the other person. It's our power. It's our choice. They don't have to respect us for us to respect them. They don't have to listen to us the way that we listen to them. But that's where we come back to that seed planting, that what if I left every conversation and even every disagreement where the person felt fully acknowledged, where they felt like, wow, this person actually took the time to listen to me, to try to understand my perspective. Even if they disagreed, they really were authentically here with me. They were in deep listening rather than distracted listening. And I think that's a great opportunity for all of us, is that we might just plant that seed, and maybe years down the road, they may see our perspective as something invaluable. Maybe they'll see it right then, and maybe they never will. But will we at least leave them with full acknowledgement?
Full acknowledgement, indeed. That's right, indeed. Powerful pillars, indeed. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Agree to respect. I love that one. That's freaking great, man. Shoot, that's what I'm talking about. Thank you. That's right, indeed, because it's so true, indeed. Because, yeah, you can folks be like, yeah, let's agree to disagree. It's like, forget you, Mike. You're like, what? Like, I don't know.
They usually say it after they're done, right? They're usually like, after, I think that, you know what? Let's just agree to disagree, right? Because they're shutting the conversation down. And that's not always the best opportunity to learn and to grow with people.
Mm-hmm. Especially when that disagreement leads to an agreement to get into some altercation afterwards, God forbid. They'd be like, oh. Like, hey. Hey, get this book. What are you talking? Where'd you get the book? Get it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So, my goodness, man, shoot. So, with putting this wonderful book together, man, what was probably the most interesting insight to where it's like, all right, now this all really comes together? Because I'm pretty sure you probably had all this wonderful research, especially being a HR professional on top of that. You probably have like the whole country of resources. But it's like when it all finally came together, like, oh, I finally have the Holy Grail.
Yeah. For me, it's staying true to the purpose of why I wrote it, right? And I think for all authors, that's important. And I'm very honest of the type of books it's twofold. It's very gray, as you can tell. The type of books that I like journal articles. I like heavy research. I love that stuff. Like, that stuff calls to me. Daniel Pink and Marty Selvin and all these people. Like, that stuff, oh my gosh, it's awesome. But I wasn't writing for those type of people. I wasn't even writing for myself, because I wanted to write for the everyday person who doesn't want to be inundated with research, but does want the book to be research-backed, right? Doesn't want every moment, hey, here's a study, here's a study, here's a study, here's a study, right? This is not an academic textbook. And so I write in story form. I write and share stories. I'm very vulnerable. And so as I was doing a lot of research, because I'm a big researcher, right? I've probably looked at over 100 journal articles, read, 20-some books, had many interviews and conversations with people. And I had to keep asking myself, Justin, how do you write this in a way that's relatable, that's simple, that's research-based and practical, that's engaging, and for the everyday person, not the academic? And so that was probably the more challenging part for me. And based upon the feedback we've gotten, we think we accomplished that well, because people picked it up like, wow, I didn't put it down, or I got through this in 3 days, or the models that you gave were really practical and I ended up using them, right? And so that's been the best part of our writing process. So I give for all authors is always know why you're writing the book and who you're writing it to. Because sometimes as you engage in the research and the things that you're learning, it can change the scope of it. And if you change the scope, great, but just know that you're changing your why of why you wrote it.
There you go. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Indeed, stand true to that purpose is definitely the genuine route to go. Indeed, the good route to indeed. So my goodness, so speaking of stay true to your purpose, sometimes you need some fuel when you're living out your purpose. So if your fabulous book, I respectfully disagree. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
It'd be a tomato. And why would it be a tomato? It'd be a tomato because we are unsure if a tomato is a fruit or a vegetable. And so we often have to keep going back and like, wait a minute, what is it again? Did it change? What is it? Sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's squishy. I'm talking about a tomato. There's a lot of different things that are there that exist. I know some people's brains play. But when you think about a tomato, right, it's like it can be used in a lot of different things, right? It's multi-use. You can eat a tomato by itself. You can put it on, slice it up on a hamburger. You can put it in a salad. And so that's where I feel like respectful disagreement can impact all areas. It can impact the big societal issues that exist. It can impact workplace teams and team dynamics. It can impact the individual. I mean, one of the biggest disagreements that we found and that we're really solving or really powerful is that who's the GOAT? Is it LeBron James or Michael Jordan, right? Well, we know the answer to that question. But the interesting thing is that that's what a tomato does. It's multifunctional. It has different forms. And we still are trying to wrap our brains around, is it a vegetable or a fruit?
That's probably one of the most interesting response to that question, D, especially about a tomato, because it makes so much sense. That's what I'm talking about.
It's a wise philosopher once told me, yes, indeed, yes, indeed.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Oh, man. Well, we're coming to ask the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you're 25 again, but you're still in the current year with all of your knowledge and experience, what advice would you give to yourself?
Wow, that's a good question. I would have adopted the principle that our business operates by the work that we do in consulting, faster as an individual, which is be the tortoise. And the tortoise, what I love, for those who don't know the story, there's a fable growing up called The Tortoise and the Hare. And the hare, they're after a race. Who can get there the fastest? And the hare is like, I got this in the bag. I'm faster. I am better. I am good. And so the gun goes off, boom, right? The hare bolts out, runs, and realizes, leaving the tortoise in the dust. So the hare's like, you know what? I'm good. Let me go in these bushes, take a quick nap real quick. Let me relax. And they take a nap, and they relax. And then when they finally wake up, like, oh, where am I? And they look up and they see the tortoise getting ready to cross the finish line. And it tries to scramble to get to the finish line, and the tortoise already crossed it. And what that has represented for us in our work and how it's tied to personal is there's many hares in our society as relates to change, as relates to diversity and inclusion, as relates to growth. And even personally, right? There's certain things that it may look good initially, but there's not long-lasting sustainable growth and or change. And so I would have told my 25-year-old self to be a tortoise, to not be slow, because we've wrongly labeled the tortoise slow. The tortoise wasn't slow. The tortoise was strategic. We only called the tortoise slow because we compared it to the hare. But the tortoise, it was consistently steady and strategically growing. And I believe I would have been beyond and farther than where I am now had I chosen the tortoise approach rather than the hare approach.
There you go. But hey, you still got yourself out of a hairy situation, though.
I love that, especially with this.
There you go. That's right indeed. That's why he's off the market, folks. He got the R&B bald look, baby. That's right indeed. Yes, indeed. Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. That's right indeed. You didn't have to sing in the middle of a desert either.
Yes. I know the same.
Well, there. But my goodness, folks, only got 1% of what my man has to offer indeed today. You only got that appetizer indeed. So for those who want the full 4-course meal, or heck, even have some copies of all of your magical books and keep up with your journey, Justin, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Yeah, so it's three places that are probably the most beneficial. Number one is around the book, is howtorespectfullydisagree.com. Great website. We have stuff that's always updating, putting a quiz on there soon, but you'll find out all the information, all the stuff that's there. The second place is just for the work that we do from an organization perspective, and that's workmeaningful.com. And that's actually a new website. We haven't told people yet, but it's in beta mode, but we've launched it, but we haven't told people. So y'all first to know from a mass production perspective. And then the third place is just LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. I'm Justin Jones, social on LinkedIn. I love connecting with people, learning from people, reading what people are doing, at least what the algorithm lets me see. So, yeah, those are the three places.
Woohoo!
Well, there you I want to ask you something, because you probably ask the people that magical question all the time, and people may not have heard it in a while from you. But if you were a food or engaged a food, what food would you be?
Yeah, my man curveballed me because I thought you were going to ask me the 25 question. The food question, shoot. But if we talk about me as a whole, I'm going to go with chocolate indeed. That's right indeed. The dark cacao chocolate, the healthy chocolate that folks love around the globe. Even if they're allergic to it, they still find a way to probably sneak a bite every now and then. Because, hey, I like to give people the goods, the good positivity, help folks to think about their life in a more positive light and help others to do the same.
Yeah, I love that. Chocolate.
Right.
Yes. You're more mocha to me than chocolate, but that's okay.
Hey, as long as we're all the chocolate factory, that's all the bad is, right? Just don't let Hershey see us a little too far away.
Hey, don't you mention that company. Now, my wife works for Mars Wrigley, so Hershey's a competitor.
Well, my goodness, so any parting word before we close up shop, my man?
Yeah. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for leading. And I guess my last words would be, I've been really challenging this whole concept of being open-minded. And I like how you're dancing. Like, I'm open-minded to your dancing right now. I may give a little bit. Open-minded. But my last words would be that there's some things that we're just not open-minded on. And that's okay. Based on my values, things I believe in, all these things. There's things I'm closed-minded on. Everybody is closed-minded on something. But even when we're closed-minded, we should never stop being open-hearted. And that's our opportunity to consistently engage people right where they are, that they feel valued, and that we plant seeds and give people the gift without an expectation of it in return of respect.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for free. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.